Mini episode 598 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Royalty Tours USA, your ultimate resource to traveling in style to attend sporting events. Follow them on the web at royaltytours.blogspot.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini episode 598 of the FDH Lounge. This is going to be a two-parter here with 598 and 599 breaking down the American League and the National League, respectively, as we get to Labor Day weekend, taking a peek at the rest of the way for this season. Rick Morris and Ken Detweiler with you, and this is going to be a fun conversation today. And Ken is doing a tremendous service being here. We needed a very special segment for 599, and I'll explain shortly. But Ken, I want to thank you for making yourself available to talk baseball here. We have about a month to go in the American League and National League races. It's going to be great to break it down with you, just like on the old days of Lights of Pitch with Ken Detweiler, your old web TV show, soon to be coming back as a podcast. So a nice little warm-up for that. Great to be here with you.
Yes, it's great to always talk baseball and solve the world's problems in between, if need be.
We're going to do that, yeah.
All right, but
absolutely.
Thank you, Rick.
Well, here's the explanation for why we needed to do 599. And, of course, you can always tell when you're listening here whether this is a version of the program that is being done live in person or over the phone lines. We needed to do one where it was live in person, where we didn't have any kind of time constraints on us. I haven't talked about this on air previously, but it's always very interesting, I think, whenever marketing sense winds up with being OCD, and certainly I walk the line of that every day. And I came to notice, as we were closing in on mini episode number 600 this summer, that it was also aligning with 800 total hours of the show. So I started getting this thought in my head, 600, 800. We need to do this in one fell swoop. We need to reach both of these milestones. We need to cross 800 hours of the show. That's, of course, the 600 mini episodes plus the 152 previous episodes at the old Sports Talk Network. Remember that place? So this is capturing the entire history of the program, and I wanted to be able to do it together. And we actually have something pretty big planned for you for 600, 800, and that is going to be, and it'll be dropping about a day or so after you hear this, it is going to be football in the 2010s. We're going through, we've got 20 clips from some of our great guests on the show, people who've played the game, people who have led in the game, people who have covered the game in the media, giving you a 360-degree slant on the game. We're dropping it 2 days before the start of the NFL season. That is our plan as of today. So that's going to be very exciting, but we needed something of a certain heft time-wise. I think that's a good euphemism to give this, to be able to fill enough time to get us to where 600 could put us over the top for 800. And Ken was generous enough to make himself available on relatively short notice. We talked about this a couple of days ago. We set it up, and I am glad to be here at Casa de Detweiler. I thank you so much for your hospitality and your awesome rec room. You've really done some great things with this. As I first noticed during your housewarming party last winter, it is really, really awesome and a great place to broadcast out of, both now and I guess in the future for you, huh?
Yes, once I can get the nerve up to get Life's a Pitch back going here. And that won't be long. I keep saying that. But with your help, and you have been helping me, it'll get there probably about the time the season's over. But
well, timing is everything, right? Just the time to talk hot stove. And, hey, we can cover the Caribbean League
that's
over the winter.
That's right.
There's always something to talk about, you know. But before we get going and looking at the American League and National League races, you mentioned something to me off air that I want to be able to get into, because if we're going to take this kind of holistic look at the 2015 season and see what's been going on, certainly one of the big initiatives has been with new Commissioner Rob Manfred, the mandate to try to reduce the time of play to make it more manageable. It had been just creeping upward for years and years and years. And certainly in the short attention theater span society that we're in these days, that's not really going to fly. And I think there's a lot of people, too, that are traditionalists maybe that didn't even like it. I mean, I've been saying for a long time how much I prefer the National League style of play to the American League. I don't like this plotting 4-hour, you know, fest here of, you know, let's make 15 changes at pitcher. And, you know, in the National League, you do have to at least think about when you're making the changes here because you don't have the designated hitter. So that does have to factor into the considerations. The time has dropped, I think you said, by what, about 7 minutes this year?
I just heard on the MLB Network, yes, that it's 7 minutes on average, seven and a half minutes, which is kind of what, if I recall correctly, that's what they were aiming for.
Right.
And they have that little pitch clock in between innings for the pitchers, and they've been saying, they said that was going great, and pitchers are ready to go even before the clock hits zero.
Right.
So that's a step in the right direction, yes.
It is. But there was something you mentioned to me also off air. It was something that Joe Girardi had talked about that could shorten the time even beyond where we're at here, and something having to do with all the endless, you know, you talk about things that expand the game, not just pitching switches, but visits to the mound, catcher and pitcher, those kinds of things here. And you said that you were startled by it, and when you told it to me, you could tell that I was kind of startled. It's an interesting idea that I can't believe nobody's talked about yet.
Yeah, Girardi basically came up with an idea that it makes total sense, and football's been using it for quite some time now.
Mm-hmm.
They just put a Bluetooth for the pitcher, so the catcher and the pitcher can talk to each other, as opposed to setting your catcher out to talk about a pitch or buying time, stalling the game until you get somebody loosened up in the bullpen to come in when things are going south. And I'm thinking all kinds of things they could do. I don't know if they want to carry it to where the manager goes out and alleviate that totally. But, I mean, you can take it a lot of different directions here.
You could. You really could. And that's, when you mentioned about football, that sort of preempted one of the questions I was going to have, because one of my thoughts immediately is Bluetooth in a stadium setting, how do you keep it from being intercepted, not just by the other dugout, but I'm thinking some bozo back in the stands here from being able to dial in. But you mentioned football, and they seem to have the proper protocols and precautions in there. So one would think if they're doing it in football, they could just transfer the technology to baseball.
Well, and I'm a baseball guy. I love football. I love my Browns. I love my Ohio State, Buckeyes, and so forth and so on. However, I've always been, since I've been coaching high school ball anyway, watching the trends that football uses. Football is so far ahead of the other sports at the high school level, at least.
Right.
But there's egos to be involved and this and that. But at high school, it's just they use all these things. And they were the first ones to ever use, you know, video, this, you know, this stuff and that stuff. And it's just – I just think it's a no-brainer to use that. I mean, I don't see a downside. I'm sure somebody will find some things wrong with this. But if a pitcher and a catcher can talk to each other.
Right, exactly.
Of course, I don't know if the catcher's going to have his glove over his mask so nobody can read his lips or any of that nonsense. I mean,
yeah, that's like what we see in the NFL. You know, like every coach is so paranoid about that. You know, like how many times do you tune into a Packers game and you see Mike McCarthy holding that Waffle House menu laminated over his face so nobody can hear him as he's his lips as he's talking to the coaches.
Well, as we're talking here, Rick, a thought just occurred to me. Maybe you could bypass the catcher completely and do like football and have a coach with his back to the field or something and
shooting out the
pitches or saying, hey, we need this, we need that.
That's true.
Throwing the curve to the outside corner or whatever.
That's true, yeah. Well, side question also, too, before we get going here, because you were talking about the technological differences between high school football and high school baseball. I'd like to ask you from your perch of doing high school coaching here. I'm going to guess that translates down even to the level of certainly in high school football, and football's a much different game than baseball, but you know that in football they would have the equivalent of shifting going on because there is a lot of sophistication now that's in the high school game. I'm guessing in high school baseball that hasn't really dribbled down yet much in the way of defensive shifting. Would I be right about that?
Yes, okay. Simply because you don't play, unless it's in your conference, you will play somebody twice.
Okay.
But other than that, I might be playing Valley Forge.
Okay.
Might be playing Dave Adams' team over there at St. Ed's.
Okay.
But that's the one-time deal.
All right.
And so
There's not enough data basically going around to be able to do
and
that.
You don't
okay.
have budgets.
Okay.
Especially in the Catholic schools.
No budget at Benedictine for spray charts, eh?
No. In fact, not even a scout. I've often thought if I could get a parent to be a bird dog and come watch Rick Morris's team.
There you go.
And pick out what the guys do, find some tendencies. But no, even nothing is in the budget.
Wow.
So,
boy, it is like night and day then between football and baseball at that level, because the bigger football programs. Again, you've been, you know, coaching at a successful baseball program, so that really kind of shows you, because the equivalent football program, think about what a St. Ignatius probably has at their disposal football wise. Eh?
My gosh, yeah, the bigger schools have that, and it's it's archaic compared to what the others.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's a good grassroots perspective here. Before we get going, as we segue to where these players would like to be someday, and hopefully they would, how's this for a segue? Hopefully they would aspire to something greater than the mediocrity of the American League circa 2015. Because this is garbage, I got to tell you. You know, I mean, my initial thought when we were going to get together and do this, I just recently did a breakdown of the National League races with Chip Carey. And we focused on the National League because now that he is primarily announcing for the Atlanta Braves, that's what he is seeing for the most part, save for the occasional interleague game. I think they had just come off a short series with Tampa Bay when I talked to him. But nevertheless, National League is mostly what he's seeing. So we stuck to that. My first thought was, well, maybe Ken and I will just do American League. And I was like, I can't do that to Ken. I cannot insist that we skip some of the great and interesting teams in the National League to just focus on what's going on here in the American League. And what's interesting is, while I was wrong and a lot of other people who made the hipster pick who thought that, again, and I, as you know, I am no fan of the way that the Indians organization has been managed since John Hart left town, managed front office-wise. I have no problem with Terry Francona. I think he's one of the very best. But as far as at the front office level. But like a lot of people, I thought they had a good chance of coming out of the American League this year because I saw garbage/mediocrity all around, and I'm thinking all they got to do is make it there. And while teams have made the World Series a couple times in recent years, including last year's participants, out of the wild card game, all things being equal, you can't count on that happening. But I'm looking at this thinking, I think the Indians may not even win the division, but I could pick them to go to the World Series anyways, because out of that rotation of four guys, it doesn't really matter. I mean, and that's truly extraordinary to say, well, we're going to use Corey Kluber in the wild card game and still not necessarily suffer in the next round. The problem is, first, you got to make it there, and their hitting has been so putrid over the course of the season with the likes of Carlos Santana and some of the other guys just not stepping up. But big picture-wise, I mean, I think I certainly was right about the American League coming in, even if I didn't pick the Indians correctly to capitalize on it. I didn't pick Detroit for last place. I won't lie and tell you that, but I thought this was going to be the year that Detroit started to turn south, and I was not buying it with Boston either. And I'll tell you what, I give a lot of credit to fellow original FDH Lounge dignitary Chris Galloway, chowd, who also wasn't seeing it with Boston either. I got to give him credit for not being a homer, because he said to me before the season, I'm right with you, Ricky. I don't see it with this pitching. So Detroit and Boston, those were a couple of paper tigers coming into the season that people were, I think, still looking at largely off of the glories of the last couple of years. You know, but their collapse, I think, has had a lot to do with why the American League has just been as mediocre as it's been.
I think there's a change coming in the winds, though, as far as Boston goes, Rick, simply because Dombrowski, they jumped all over him.
Yep.
He didn't even get to go home, probably, before they said, hey, take your car over to the airport. We want to talk.
Yep.
And that's a smart move on their part. He'll be aggressive. They've got tons of money, as we all know. And they've got a good farm system. Their whole outfield has been revamped over in Boston.
Yep.
I think they really just need an ace to go with the rest of the knuckleheads they've got in the rotation.
Well, exactly. And their problem is they basically made, you know, some Joe Dumars-type moves last year in the offseason, this whole thing of let's pay Ben Gordon and Charlie Villanueva max money, that kind of a deal. Because when you're going in and you're throwing money at some of the jerkwads that they got in their rotation there, Rick Porcello certainly comes to mind. Is that a guy that should be making $20 million? I think not.
No.
So, You know, that was just, you know, you can't be the guy, you know, sitting in the bar on Court Street in Athens at 2 a.m. looking around and saying, there's my beauty queen. You know, it doesn't work out that way, Ken.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, and you're going to – Sandoval, he's got a body like I do. And, yeah. You know, they're paying him how much. And now I'm getting away from the rotation. But Hanley Ramirez, he'll be the first baseman next year.
Yeah, by default, because that's the one position where they don't have anybody to put in there. His bat – I guess translates, but this thing recently here, when you're looking at league average at different positions statistically, that's been a big thing here. Hanley Ramirez always stood out because he gave you a premium bat at shortstop. Hanley Ramirez at first base, I'm not going to say just another guy, but he's a lot closer to being just another guy than he is Paul Goldschmidt, let me tell you.
Yeah, I agree totally. And it's just, but they're paying him big bucks again. I mean, the money they have in those two guys alone.
Yep.
And then you add Porcello, like you said.
Right.
Good Lord, there's the Tribe's budget right there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I half think they got Sandoval just for security reasons, just so they could have a body double for Big Pappy. But that's, you know, what kind of a deal is it where, you know, it's not an ideal situation to have somebody that's just clogging up your lineup at DH.
Yeah.
But they're going to have that for as far as the eye can see, because if Ortiz has got however many years left, and you start to think he's getting near the end, and then he fools you again. But, you know, still probably 2-3, whatever. Well, immediately, if not sooner, Sandoval's going to need to be at DH. So that's something Dombrowski can't be too thrilled with. I mean, it's not going to stop him from taking the job. Obviously, the endless gobs of cash that they have is, to be able to overcome their mistakes is something he was looking at. But again, this is one of these things here, the difference in organizations. Dombrowski gets onto the market. Boston already had those spots filled, but they didn't let it stop them. The Indians, not so much. And then Mark Shapiro ends up leaving for Toronto anyways.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's a good thing for Shapiro to leave.
Yeah.
I was kind of wishing Antonetti would follow him
out
the
door. Can he go
with you? Yeah, I mean, you've been around too long. I mean, everybody says what a great success they are and this and that. And I'm like, okay, what year was that?
Well, yeah, you
or
know,
what millennium was it?
The whole pompous thing, too. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen, you know, as the saying goes, a guy, you know, a couple of guys that love the smell of their own farts as much as those two. I mean, they just, you know, it's like, what kind of track record have you had to allow you to have this kind of an ego and everything that we did? And really, what have you done? Your drafting was absolute suck for like 10 years there.
Yeah,
and it was just a matter of, oh, well, it's better since 08, since we put another guy in there. It's like, that's what they always love doing organizationally, is moving the goalpost. You know, since 08, well, they've blown a couple picks since 08. They traded two of them for Ubaldo Jimenez, and neither the picks they traded nor Ubaldo Jimenez ended up being anything special over a course of time here. You know, but again, it's all about moving the goalposts. And I remember 10 years ago, back on your show, the thing that year, well, since June 1st, you know, Casey Blake and Ben Broussard, whatever.
Like, was that Mr. Dolan who made that comment?
Yeah, exactly. I'll never forget that. On your show, you and a certain mustachioed gentleman who shall remain nameless, he in particular was like, Rick, you're going to be a good boy, right? You're going to be on your best behavior. Absolutely. You know, they ran that commercial thing during the break of somebody talking about since June 1st. We came back from break. I was ranting and raving about that, about you do know we've been playing since the beginning of April, right? And you don't get the cherry pick, you know, based on that. And then we get a couple minutes into the interview with Paul Dolan, and he drops a since June 1st down. You know, I'm just sitting there like, I have promised to be a good boy. I have promised not to embarrass Ken, and now I get provoked. It was just one of those moments.
And now they pushed me too far.
And I sat there, and I gritted my teeth, and I think the certain mustachioed gentleman was looking at me through the glass, laughing, and, you know.
I believe that was Mr. Dolan's last appearance on our show.
It may have been, but
I'm not.
That one was through no fault of mine, because I held up my end of the bargain. It's not like the time on another show at the old Sports Talk Network, as we reminisce here, Reality Check, when we had on, largely through the strength of connections in the local media, good friend Ron Glasnap.
Yep.
He got Bob DiBiasio on the show, the front office noted spin meister. So we had him on, and this was during an off season, and he's talking about, oh boy, well, you see these kids up here, young and hungry and whatever, and you know, it was a similar thing. Ron made me promise to be on my best behavior, and I was. But as soon as DiBiasio concluded the interview with us and got off the line, and right before we went to commercial break, I said, man, I am thirsty. I could really go for some Kool-Aid right now. we got off the air, and Ron just went off on me. I was like, hey, I didn't say anything when he was here.
No, we always believed in freedom of speech on our show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Those were the days, you know.
Oh,
but
politically correctness is out the door, all that stuff.
Oh, exactly. You know, and that's what allows us to characterize the American League in the way that we do here, you know, the mediocrity of some of these teams. And in the Eastern Division, the collapse of Boston has left it wide open, and a collapse more recently of Baltimore, who through the genius of Buck Showalter, I think, has really punched above their weight the last couple of years. So yeah. I look at this now almost like almost inevitable regression to the mean, because they're still not there yet as far as being a franchise that you would expect to go deep into the playoffs. And you know, they are coming around in some ways, but you know, you're getting a good year out of a guy like Chen, but he's kind of a soft tosser at a place like Camden Yards. So even the things that have been going their way, you don't know are sustainable.
Yeah.
But you know, Manny Machado certainly is looking like that franchise guy you build around. I mean, the future, I'd say, looks a little brighter than the present right now. But
right.
I know you've been a big touter of Buck Showalter in recent years, and justifiably so. You can't lay any of this at his feet.
No, he does a great job, and he is. I've been reading this book about Billy Martin called The Flawed Genius, and he coached for Billy Martin.
Okay.
With the Yankees, apparently. And then, so he's a disciple of his. I like the way he handles the players. I thought Baltimore had the pitching, and then their hitting started to come around last year, or last couple years, and I thought they had the whole package. But It's a head scratcher with the Orioles. It really is.
Well, you think they'd like to have the Jake Arrieta deal back?
Oh yeah, yeah, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, whether or not he'd be doing the same thing at Camden Yards, and again with the designated hitter in the American League, in all fairness, but still, the way that he has just blossomed has just been unbelievable. You look at the teams that in the division that had been the mirror images for a good part of the season. I remember doing our mid-season show, I believe, with another fellow FDH Lounge dignitary talking a lot of baseball, Steve Callis, and saying, you know, if you took Toronto's bats and Tampa Bay's pitching, you'd really have something. And then, you know, Toronto went out and souped it all up, and, you know, they're pulling away with the division now and looking like they may be a team possibly to go deep into October. I know that FDH Lounge dignitary and professional handicapper Kyle Ross is picking them to come out of the American League right now, and it's not hard to see why. You look at possibly interjecting Marcus Stroman back into the lineup before the end of the season, coming off of that knee injury. You know, they put David Price in there, a lineup that is just supersonic, and a team that when you're in the ballpark of about plus 200 in runs scored at this time of the season, especially with some of the crappy pitching they had earlier on during the season, that tells you all you need to know about them.
Well, now, the only blemish, if you subscribe to this theory, Rick, and the theory is you've got to be there to the dance at least once.
Yes.
And they haven't.
It's the longest postseason drought in sports, in the Big Four, I believe.
Right. I mean, I know that goes for basketball and some other sports, football and stuff like that. I don't know if this really fits Toronto, because they have a lot of veterans.
Right.
They've got some youth, too. But if you subscribe to that now, and I'm not saying that I do or I don't, but you know, typically or traditionally, you get beat out in the first or second round.
Right. And now that's a very good point. And you look up and down the lineup here, and even the guys who are veterans, I'm not seeing too many guys who have a ton of postseason experience. So that's a very good point. And it's interesting, and it kind of varies by sport. I remember politely disagreeing before last NBA season with noted NBA reporter Rick Bucher on the program, because he was picking the Cavs behind, I think, Chicago in the East on the whole same pretense you're talking about there versus I said, look, I think basketball is a special kind of a deal, and I think the Cavs are the de facto incumbent with LeBron. You know, if Miami had a bunch of turnover but LeBron was still there, we would look at Miami as the incumbent versus LeBron comes to a new team. I think LeBron makes the Cavs the de facto incumbent.
Yep.
So in basketball, it's easy to look at that and make what you will of it. He took one side, I took the other, and for once I was right on that. But in baseball, yeah, I don't know what to make of it because there is that sense, although you look at Kansas City last year. That was a heck of a postseason drought themselves, and they go to the seventh game of the World Series on their own turf.
Yeah, this might be an exception in all these sports. I mean, things have changed over the years, and great examples that you're putting forth. But on paper, Toronto, that's the only blemish I could see, the only question mark. And that's we've just disproved that.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, yeah, possibly. Based on what Kansas City did to whatever extent. And you've also got the Yankees in the mix in the division there. One of the strangest stories of the year in all of baseball, almost more so than Houston and the Cubs, because you knew that those teams had a wealth of young talent, and both are getting it done ahead of schedule. But for the, you know, I'd rather have young talent than old talent. I'd rather have a team that's got, you know, that's going to peak in 2018 than a team that peaked in 2009. And that's what the Yankees looked like. Joe Girardi, I said it at midseason. I'll continue to say it now. Maybe the strongest candidate for manager of the year based on the whole Fountain of Youth thing they've had going on this year.
Well, and both those teams, as you just mentioned, the Cubs and the Yankees, and even Houston, well, Madden over there in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's got these baby Cubs.
Yep.
Man, oh man. I know they have talent, or knew they had talent coming up, like Bryant and all these guys. But my God, they've made it look easy to some extent. I mean, these guys they keep bringing guys up and up and up, and they just fit right in.
Well, that's the macro story of the year in baseball, and there's no question about it. And there's a lot of years when you look at it, and there's no easy macro storyline that jumps out at you. This is not one of those years. This is a year where we can definitively say that the teams that have the super young talent, under 25 in particular, and you saw it this year with the All-Star game, that the explosion of talent at a young age. And to an extent, it's easy to look back and say late 90s, early 2000s, that the game was warped by steroids in terms of guys who would have the second peak or the extended peak. But we're seeing something on the back end closer to the traditional aging patterns where you get into the mid-30s and later, and it's certainly diminishing returns as you go along. But what doesn't correspond is this explosion at an early age. We didn't have any Mike Trouts back in the 70s and 80s or anything like that. Or I understand. I mean, he may be a once-in-a-lifetime guy, but even Bryce Harper or some of the other guys in there. McCutcheon. Yeah, Bryant, what he's doing there. You know, we didn't have that going on at as early of an age. So it's very, very interesting. There's no easy explanation for why that's the case. But it makes it all the more extraordinary for the Yankees that they're excelling, relatively speaking, in spite of not being one of those teams. I mean, you look at a guy like one of the only exceptions to the rule, even though he's not their closer right now, it's pretty clear he's their long-term closer. Dellin Betances is there in the bullpen. I mean, that's a guy who's perfectly along the lines of what we're talking about here with these young guys that are just crushers. I mean, that guy is going to be the next Mariano Rivera for them, barring injury. But, you know, like Rivera in 96, you know, he's their setup guy this year. This is their year of Rivera to Wetland, as they have him and Andrew Miller in there. Maybe that'll even extend into next year. But you look at the youth and the dominance in their eighth inning pitching, and that's about it for this team. I mean, it's not that they have no young talent, but up and down the line, when you're counting on getting, you know, not career years necessarily, but career resurgent years from Mark Teixeira, from A-Rod, which, you know, it would be easy to snicker and say, hey, well, what kind of masking agent is he using now? But, you know, you'd like to think he's not a big enough dummy for something like that, but I don't know if past history proves that or not. But up and down the line here, it's been a remarkable year of resurgence that for a team that was starting to look like they were when they kind of bottomed out in the late 80s and early 90s. That may still be their fate next year, although they're now starting to get some guys coming up through the pipeline, so maybe that'll never happen, unfortunately for us Yankee haters. But, you know, you got to take your hat off to the job that Girardi is doing this year. It has been, I don't know anybody that could have forecast a season like this.
No, it looks, you look at it on paper at the beginning of the year, and even now, it looks like a patchwork job.
Yes.
And so I got to give it, I have to go along with what you're saying about Girardi. It's he's done a terrific job. I mean, you got Headley. You got DeGregorius hitting about 270 now.
Right.
He was a banjo hitter. He, up and down the line of that outfield doesn't strike you like they have anything out there. It's just...
No. I mean, although it's interesting. I mean, Gardner was always a guy, and he's not far off of that. I'd say from being a slappy, but, I mean, he's more towards... You know, a mid-teens power guy rather than a 10-home run guy.
He's
which,
average to above.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, a difference of, at best, what, maybe one home run per month. But, you know, somehow or another, it looks better on paper.
Yeah.
You know, but, again, it's a Yankee team that has just really been, like you said, a patchwork unit seemingly in a lot of ways and getting the job done and, you
not
know.
Not the kind of teams you and I are – used to seeing them when they bring in a Reggie Jackson or they go out and buy a player and this and that. And I mean, they weren't even active in any of the winter trade meetings, I don't think, or anything.
No, they weren't because, you know, and again, and I give credit to, I think, Hal Steinbrenner is the lead partner there. They're trying to work their way back to some kind of semblance of fiscal sanity there. But that's what's fascinating about them is that if they weren't the Yankees – and a team with all the sunk costs and overpaid guys that they are, you know, if they were wearing any other uniform, that's a team maybe the rest of the country could get behind as a bunch of scrappers and guys that are just, you know, reliving their old days and getting, you know, glory days. You know, that would be like any other team. We'd be celebrating them.
Yeah.
As it is now, we're kind of gritting our teeth because it's the Yankees.
Yeah, but we're throwing the love at them, which shows our character.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And they're right there in it. They have, at this point, you'd have to say, a very good shot at one of the wild cards. I mean, I'm going to go ahead now. It's still a narrow lead for Toronto, but I'm putting Toronto down for the division title. Yeah. Yankees, I think, have a decent chance of being, you know, one of the wild card teams in there, if nothing else because they are the antithesis of Toronto. They are a team that is loaded with September and October experience, that's going to help.
I've watched recently how the Indians have handled them in Toronto, and the first couple games have been playoff.
They have been.
Caliber. I mean, packed house, good pitching, good defense for the most part, and just close games. And it's just – so, yeah.
Well, I have to say, though, that I have to give a shout-out to another. I mentioned one of our original FDH Lounge dignitaries before, Chris Galloway.
Sure.
I'll mention another one in Tim Faust, who, as you know, this week in our Keeper League, he and I are locked in a stiff first-round matchup. Two teams that have won 100 games that are battling in the first round. I can't believe it. But
also known as the National League.
Pretty much, yeah.
Versus the playoff game I'm in the American or Callis League.
And hopefully your first-round series is going to go well. Like mine, hopefully, but I'm looking at this like
kudos,
you know,
to us.
Of all the times there to be progression to the mean, he gets two home runs out of Yan Gomes. I'm sitting there going, really? Really, Yan Gomes?
Who I traded for. Yeah. I traded.
Did you? Okay.
I traded him for Gattis.
Well, at least you got Gattis back. That was better than Toronto did in the deal. Yeah. You outperformed Mark Shapiro's new general manager and your equivalent, Ken.
Well, that's right. Yeah. And Gattis was healthy all year, too.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it's truly unbelievable, but...
you did have to. In a losing effort, I might add.
In a losing effort, but, you know, still, nevertheless, a clutch effort. I have to say, in looking at the American League Central, this is a situation where, you know, it's kind of old school. You look at Kansas City being in first place, and that caught me by surprise. I thought they were going to be like the Colorado Rockies because they were essentially a team that just ran in place for like 90% of last year, got hot at the right time, carried it through.
Yep.
That's not always the pedigree of a team that can sustain it, especially with all the underachieving hitters that they had. But the hitters who stopped underachieving in October have continued to stop, or however that should better be phrased. They're not underperforming anymore. They got the Moustakas and Hosmers of the world. and they've been running away with the American League Central. I say it's old school to see them on top, thinking of the 70s and 80s, but you know what's a lot more old school than that even? Chicken pox as being a thing. And supposedly,
yes,
they've had a little bit of an outbreak in their clubhouse here.
Yes, they've had the reliever, Herrera and
Alex Rios.
Rios, thank you.
Yeah, so you can see where that's going to hurt them. And Rios hasn't had the finest of years, but not having Herrera, who notwithstanding not being the closer, has been, well, it's hard to say anybody's done a better job, I guess, than Wade Davis. But, I mean, Herrera has been right there basically with him. And that's the weird thing. I mean, Kansas City's not playing for anything right now. I mean,
right. There's
a chance that Toronto could run them down for the number one seed. But beyond that, Kansas City's not playing for a whole lot. But as we do this, and this is where, again, breaking kayfabe here, we are taping this a few days before this show goes live.
Sure.
So it may be an entire outbreak in the clubhouse by the time this goes live. I hope not. I don't want to see that happen to anybody.
Whole city of Kansas City under quarantine.
But it's a weird thing in society right now, because I remember, and I don't know the specific teams, but last year in the NHL, I don't know if you heard about this, there was a couple teams that had a mumps outbreak.
I did.
Yeah.
I did hear that. Yeah, and you being the hockey guy that you are.
Yeah, like you'd think I would remember the teams, but I don't. So it's like it's a weird thing. So you don't know how that's going to affect Kansas City, but
they've got a double-digit lead over anybody in their division, which
totally
took me off guard.
Well,
I mean, when
yeah.
I saw what Chicago did in the offseason, they were talking about this and that. And Ken Williams, say goodbye. I think you're done.
Well, yeah. There. Yeah, I didn't really buy it with the White Sox either. I didn't think that they were going to be. They're a team that's kind of top-heavy right now. I mean, you look at, an Abreu, a David Robertson. I mean, Chris Sale. I mean, they have some players that are absolutely sensational. And you look up and down. It's some of the fart heads in the rest of their lineup, and you go, really? Is that the best you can do? So
you brought Smarja over.
Yeah,
that was a
Smarja.
Big trade.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he hasn't performed to the expectations that they would have thought. Jose Quintana is like perennially, at least mildly disappointing. So
yeah. They
haven't lived up to it. Kansas City, the weird thing about them, until they traded for Johnny Cueto, who's been decent but not great. This is a team that, again, really was lacking that ace coming into the season
right. Here.
I mean, and Edison Volquez has, he's done okay, and that's a guy that can really run hot and cold. Fortunately, they've been getting the good version of him for them. But it's weird because the entire world learned about this, of course, last offseason, that otherworldly defense that they have. Some of it goes to the shifting. Some of it goes to just the athletes playing the positions.
Yep.
I mean, Kansas City... It has that reputation for if you hit it, they will run it down. But beyond that, that's maybe the most amazing thing is you look up and down this lineup, and they don't necessarily fit the profile of a team that you would expect to be dominating the way that they are. Although, what could work out in their favor is that sort of fits the profile if you think back to it. Those turn-of-the-century Yankees, how many guys on that team really – and it wasn't that anybody really sucked. But it was like nobody really wowed you statistically. What I mean? Even Andy Pettit. Andy Pettit's, numbers weren't, so ERA, WHIP, the peripherals.
Bernie
for a guy
Williams.
That was like, yeah, exactly. Like, that's kind of what Kansas City reminds me of a little bit.
Wow,
is that,
I never thought of it that way, but that's a great analogy.
Well, thank you. I'm looking at it like this is a, there's no Trout, there's no McCutcheon, there's no Goldschmidt. There's these celebrated guys of 2015, the faces of the game right now. Maybe the closest that they have, I guess, is Lorenzo Cain, who he's like sort of the perfect Royal. He's a guy who runs down everything that gets hit to him,
yeah.
And, power, that is maybe like a millimeter above average at best, and makes great contact.
Well, here's something, too, now, as I'm listening to you here, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
It's there was a stat out, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but progressively the last 2 years, defense has gotten worse.
Right.
And people are going back to why don't they take infield before games?
Right.
Why don't they do this? Why don't they challenge each other?
Right.
If you get an error, Rick, in a game, it's going to cost you X amount of dollars. Take some pride in it. Because when you said Kansas City had great pitching, Kansas City has great defense, and that's what's lacking in the major leagues, period.
It is.
So that's a premium, at least in my mind, as I'm hearing you, because
mm-hmm.
you've identified the pitching as being very, very good
yep.
at the bottom. identified the defense. If you hit it, we'll get it.
Yep.
And here you have them.
Well, and that's the thing, too. I mean, this year, as opposed to last year at least, they're not going to go into the postseason lacking in power in terms of the perception. They've got a number of guys in double digits. And, again, the Moustakas of the world, Hosmer, they're hitting a little bit closer to what you would expect power-wise, a little bit anyways. You put a Kendry Morales in there, that definitely helps things out. So they're a really interesting team. We've talked previously about a little bit out of sequence with Cleveland and Detroit, but the underachievers, you mentioned the White Sox. That brings us to Minnesota, which Minnesota, to me, they're sort of like the poster child for the American League this year, them and Texas. Like, I know that they've been bringing up, and they're a little bit closer maybe to what we would expect, you know, in terms of getting the impact from the minor leagues there. You know, you put Sano in the lineup and see what he can do. But they're still a team that's just pretty mediocre top to bottom to me. I mean, when you have Minnesota and Texas on the periphery of the race, I think it's really more an indictment of the landscape of the American League right now.
I've heard him, I've heard the Twins referred to as the little engine that could.
Yeah.
By several announcers, talk, you know, writers, whatever the case may be.
Right.
And that fits them, for me anyway, that fits them to a T. They always bring back the Minnesotians,
mm-hmm.
if that's the proper term.
Right.
You know, like Maurer and all these guys, they love playing in Minnesota.
Right.
And always have. But, yeah, they're there, and when you look at them again, it's like, really?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Buxton hasn't done much as a call-up this year, and that just goes to, in fairness to him,
right.
We have always expected that. You expect that guys come up and may scuffle a little bit. I think we've gotten a little bit spoiled the last couple of years with the impact of some of these guys, you know, in the way that Sano has played at third base. But, again, you go beyond, okay, they're really good in the ninth inning with Glenn Perkins, but, you know, their pitching staff, yeah, you know, they got some guys that can, you know, get her done from time to time here. You know, Philip Hughes, you know, can go out and eat some innings for you, and you'll look up and down the line. Irvin Santana, their big free agent signing, has been a little closer to vintage Irvin Santana, which is not good for them.
And where is Ricky Nolasco when you need him?
Yeah, Ricky Nolasco, and, you know, I mean, you know, Mike Pelfrey is basically a carbon-based form of life. That's about all we can say for him. You know, he goes out there and, you know, fills a spot and eats some innings and whatever.
Boy, there we go. So, going to the zoo.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for Minnesota to be in it and a team like the Indians on the periphery of it, when you look at the way that Carlos Santana has, you know, same guy basically, right, has fallen apart this year, and it's just, you know, it's an indictment, I think, of the landscape here. And having said that, I mean, it would feel like the most Cleveland thing ever, way more so than if the Cavs had won the title last year. And again, you and I think that they're the favorite next year,
yep,
going in. But I mean, what would feel more like a Cleveland scenario is the team sneaks in with 83 wins where they stunk most of the year and somehow gets the world championship through the back door. Doesn't that feel more like how it's going to go?
And the Huey, Dewey, and Louie that they sold off, Moss, yeah, Bourne, and Bro Ohio,
yeah,
are nowhere to be found.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, and that's the whole thing here, too. I mean, the notion that they're going to play better after they hollowed out the lineup. And you know, Bourne, he was no great shakes. The best you can say about him is he played well enough to become some kind of a plausible trade candidate for Atlanta
Yes.
You know. And but the notion they're going to be doing better without him and Moss, who, say what you will, yeah, the guy had a, you know, hole in his swing that we could drive an 18-wheeler through. But with that comes some pop.
Yes.
And he would give you the occasional home run. But it's just hilarious, too. I mean, the bad contract that they had to take back in the form of Chris Johnson,
yeah,
which that was at least it goes through 2017. So it's a matter of it hurts you less, but it hurts you for longer. And that's a thing, too. You know, I know a guy who, you know, had some fun in the 70s like yourself can relate to what I'm about to say here. But, you know, the notion that you're just going to dump these guys, you know, and not have to pay any kind of a price, The phrase that comes into my my head is ass or grass, nobody rides for free. That's nobody what that does. Deal was about.
Exactly. Well, and with Chris Johnson, third base has been like an abyss.
Yeah.
I mean, so why not? I mean, maybe he can help you out there. I mean, Chisenhall sure is. Chisenhall is now in the outfield.
Right. Actually doing better there than he did
at
third base. Urcel at third base, I mean, defensively he's been pretty good, but you know, we do this just in, we do expect guys to hit at that position also.
That's a hitting position.
Yeah.
You got it at the corners.
So, yeah, one would hope that he can produce there a little bit, but again, the thing that's with their drafting being as abysmal as it's been for so long, that's what makes them the antithesis of a team like Houston. There's this whole thing of like, well, we're not a big market team. What do you expect, eh? I don't know why I'm doing a hockey accent for that. But anyways, you know,
mumps.
Yeah, that's a little out of place. Yeah, more than a little out of place. But you look at Houston, and again, we talked about this. They're very similar to the Cubs in terms of we knew this was going to happen at some point.
Yeah.
Just not this year. And, you know, a team that was the big hipster favorite in that division, Seattle. And, look, even I had them on the periphery of the playoff race.
Yes.
You know, they've kind of fallen apart, not least of which because, you know, Robbie Cano ends up getting old right in the, you know, at the front end of that contract. They're another team that's kind of top-heavy. You know, him, King, Felix, a couple other guys there.
You got Cruz. Cruz has lived up to
it. Yes, one of the preeminent power hitters in the game right now. You know, Kyle Seager is coming along nicely, but beyond that, you know, it just Seattle just hasn't had enough there, and that was my question at the beginning of the season: were they going to have the depth? I would have said the same thing about Houston at their stage of development. I mean, they got a little bit more aggressive in the offseason, but even they weren't thinking this was going to be the year. And again, you look at the way that their pitching has come along, and I think that is what has done it as much as anything else, as much as the hitters like George Springer, Carlos Correa getting called up and becoming another wunderkind, but the pitching has been very strong.
Well, and to go along with that, they sent down Josh Fields, who his ERA and whip, I think most teams in the major leagues would take him right now.
Yes.
And I don't know their pitching to that extent, but to Seneca, that raised an eyebrow for me because I'm thinking that guy's coming along,
right?
And he's young, but they sent him down because apparently they have somebody better.
Yeah, and that's an interesting choice whenever you have a guy in the rotation who doesn't miss a lot of bats like Feldman. But nevertheless, you know, and I've had that guy on a fantasy team in the past, and he'll never win your strikeout category for you, kids. But you know. Kuchel doing what he has done, becoming one of the preeminent pitchers in the American League, a guy that you can build around. And then from there, it's been a little bit kind of spotty. But, you know, McHugh is somebody who is capable of stepping up. McCullers is a young arm who has really kind of come along for them. So, you know, you talk about Toronto, you know, no playoff experience. What's that going to be? Houston's a team that looks like they're going to be there, and they're sort of like Toronto times 10 in that regard. So you wonder if the collar is going to get a little tight or whatever. But this Carlos Correa, that being that, again, he's a guy that may not be too far off the pace of a Machado or maybe even a Mike Trout, and you just wonder what a superlative talent like that can do.
Well, he's a blue chipper. My question to you as I've been watching the standings is I wouldn't discount the Rangers.
No. I wouldn't either.
Even catching them.
I wouldn't either, and that's the thing. But, again, and maybe it's not fair of me to ding them, but part of it comes from I can't quite figure out how they're doing it. And I guess
either.
That's where I have a bias.
And if, let me just interrupt for just one
second.
Go ahead,
buddy.
As I'm listening to you, Rick, and listening to our conversation here, we've got quite a few teams. We started off with the Yankees. How are they doing?
Yeah.
And we've evolved all the way down here. How are the Rangers doing it? And how far into the show?
Yeah. We're in the West, and it's the same kind of a deal. You're right.
They're sprinkled throughout the conversation.
They are indeed. And Gallardo is a guy who, again, has had for a guy who's been down a couple of years, of all things, you come to the American League, you pitch in that ballpark, you go to Arlington, and you become the guy that you were supposed to become in Milwaukee. But I just can't shake this feeling of waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yep.
And, again, he's not – at this stage of the game either, a guy that's missing that many bats. You know, the strikeout to walk ratio. It looks like he's sort of doing it in spite of that. Yeah, they traded for Cole Hamels. You've got Fielder at first base, but he's sort of done what Gonzalez did for the Dodgers. Most of that is powered off of a huge start.
Yes.
He and Adrian Gonzalez have sort of done the same thing. Mitch Moreland, I always did figure if he could only stay healthy, would be a difference maker.
He
kind of has been, yeah.
Yeah, he could play, and you got Hamilton.
But Adrian Beltre, who I had on my non-keeper league team this year, to my chagrin.
Him on my team.
Yeah, not a great year by his standards. So I'm looking at Texas, and again, maybe this comes from the whole thing of, I mean, like the rest of the world, I wrote them off when Yu Darvish went down, but I still just can't shake that feeling of how are they doing this. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they're not the worst team in baseball by far, but, you know, and I guess it's not fair to lump them in with Minnesota because I have a little better understanding of how they're doing it than Minnesota. But by the same token, I get this, it's kind of the same vibe.
Yeah, they've got some names, and then on the flip side of that record, so to speak, going back to an old school reference when you had a 45. And you
inside,
the Rangers. The flip side of that record is...
They used to play those on record players, kids.
Yes. Look at Google it.
Yes.
You have the Angels.
Yeah.
Who are totally just sinking into the murky waters.
No excuse. No excuse at all. I mean, you talk about top-heavy teams, yes, and they kind of are, especially financially, with the way that they have shelled out their contracts, but the way that they have come along, you expect better than this. And it's very, very interesting, too, because, you know, they've gone through a couple of GMs the last couple of years, and I'm a believer in Mike Socha, but at what point does he stop being Teflon? And we're going to talk about a manager in the National League here very shortly where that's going to be the same kind of thing. At what point does he stop being Teflon? You expect better than this from the Angels. In an American League as mediocre as this, they should have one of the five playoff spots or at least be right there in a dead heat, and they are not.
Yeah, and they've got, are they going to cut payroll? Who knows? I mean, that's the beauty of baseball, beauty of sports, really.
Yeah.
I mean, all this stuff you could surmise, speculate, whatever.
Right.
But the Angels, what a disappointment. Because I thought they'd do a whole lot better than what they are.
They really have been. They certainly have been. And even spots where you look at the kind of mediocre numbers for somebody like a Joe Smith. Although I do think we could certainly say things are pretty sterling for him off the field. But there's a sly reference to Ohio University graduate Allie LaForce. Thumbs up to a Bobcat. But
oh, he is. Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, big fan.
Oh, wow.
Mostly just because she's a Bobcat. Of course. But the Angels have had a tough year. Not as tough as a team that Billy Beane pretty much made a my tired mind can't even think of the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yep.
Yes. By for whatever reason, like, hey, let's trade away Josh Donaldson. Hey, let's trade away Brandon Moss. And, you know, they have really, you know, gone about the business of really sucking this year, as you would expect. But we talk about the breakthrough guys in baseball. And when you're talking about the finest arms in the American League now, and if he can stay healthy for the future, Sonny Gray is right there.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's a terrific.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, he pitched today, I believe.
Yeah.
And I know this is pre-recorded a little bit by a couple of days, but...
look up the results, kids.
Yeah, look it up. But, you know, a team that we haven't mentioned, and when I was looking at the standings, post-Madden.
Yeah.
The Rays.
That's right. We kind of glossed over them a little bit in the East. Let's go back to that. Yeah, because we just talked about them as sort of being the anti-Toronto for a good chunk of the year. But
yeah.
Pitching has kept them at least at, I think it would be generous to say they're at the periphery right now. They kind of are.
Yeah.
But when you got an arm like Archer in there, that's another guy just like Sonny Gray.
Yeah.
And again, we talk about these super young, super phenomenal talents in the game. But a lineup that is just abysmal. I mean,
yeah,
I wouldn't.
It's a head scratcher, isn't
it? Yeah, I wouldn't whiz on it if it was on fire. I mean, they are just. They're pretty bad, you know.
Well, that's another team that's, you look at them again, the theme is, I didn't even think they were going to do anything once Madden left. I figured there was a reason he's leaving, or many reasons. And here they are. Do I think they're going to go into the playoffs?
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I do not.
Right.
But hats off to him for
Kevin Cash
even being in the mix.
Excellent job. He really, really has. And the thing that's amazing, too, is, you know, you look at a team like this, and it's a real shame, I think, in looking here, because I want to look for somebody to single out. I guess Carlos Correa for Houston. We'll go infielder to infielder here. It's a shame to say this. Yeah. But Evan Longoria. And it's like,
yes.
Remember when he was going to be that guy? And it's like, now he never will be at this stage of his career.
No,
I mean, he peaked at very, very, very good.
A good solid, and that's where he is.
He never had more than a cup of coffee at greatness. And that's a shame, because you thought he was going to be one of those guys.
Yep. Yeah,
I
hadn't thought of that, but you're absolutely right.
I get sad when I look at that, but that's they are where they are. But, in looking at this, I go back to it, and, you know, you do have to pick two teams to make the wild cards here in the American League, and this is where I really kind of struggle with it. I mean, I guess it comes down to, you know, we've already said that, you know, the Angels have got issues, and I think issues that go beyond anything we can see. The Yankees in Texas, we may not necessarily know how they're doing it, but I'll default to those two, obviously Houston, KC, Toronto, as the division winners. I'll say Texas and Yankees as the wild cards, and I think I will join esteemed FDH Lounge dignitary Kyle Ross in picking Toronto to come out of the American League. So how do you see it shaping up, Ken?
Yeah, I this could be a first, but I agree totally. I have the Yankees and the Rangers. I will put an asterisk by both those, that they could bump or catch the Blue Jays and the Astros.
Oh, very interesting.
Because I just, you know, I saw how the Tribe played the Blue Jays.
Yep.
And they're not even in the same division.
Right.
And they've got like four or five teams ahead of them.
Yep.
For a one game, thank you, go home, get the golf clubs, let's
exactly.
go.
Exactly.
So I still am holding out a little bit of hope for the Yankees. Not hope for them. I'm not rooting for them, or the Rangers.
Right.
That they could overtake the teams that are in first place, the Blue Jays and the Astros.
There you
but
go.
But other than that, wholeheartedly agree with you.
A real clip and save on that, on running down to the division winners. We'll see how that shakes out.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Paper Mate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.